Chapter 9. Missing. The family was very worried when Virginia did not turn up at tea time. Worry turned to fear as the hours went on. They searched every room in the house. Then Mr. Otis, Washington, and the Duke searched the countryside around. No one had seen Virginia or heard of her since she left the Duke. Suspicion even fell on the travellers that had been camping in Dark Fell Hollow. But the travellers were good fellows, and they were so upset at the news of Virginia's disappearance that they joined in the search too. Mr. Otis and the boys and half the village trudged far and wide with lanterns, searching everywhere. The young Duke of Cheshire was wild with despair and galloping hither and thither, despite Mr. Otis's fears for his safety. By the evening, everyone was truly frightened, for no trace of the missing girl could be found. Her mother lay on the sofa weeping. "My poor child," she wailed. "What can have happened?" Mrs. Umney mopped Mrs. Otis's forehead. "Oh, woe, oh, woe. Perhaps we shall never know," she muttered. This didn't help matters very much. The young Duke wanted to go on searching all night long, but everyone was worn out. Mr. Otis insisted they should have something to eat. It was important to keep up their strength, he said. Supper was ordered. It was a sad and gloomy meal. Hardly anyone spoke. Even the twins were silent. Mr. Otis said that the first thing in the morning they would telegraph Scotland Yard for their top detectives to be sent down without delay. Just as they were going out of the dining room, midnight struck on the big hall clock. Its chimes echoed around the house, and when the last stroke sounded, there was a deafening crash. This was followed by a sudden, shrill cry. A crack of thunder shook the house to its foundations, and a strain of weird, unearthly music floated on the air. Mrs. Umney clutched at Mother. "Oh, doom, oh, doom," she cried. "Something amiss is in the room." They all looked up. All of a sudden, a panel at the top of the stairs flew open. Virginia stepped out, smiling. In her hand, she was holding a little box. Mrs. Otis leapt up the stairs and held her daughter tightly in her arms. Then they all fell upon Virginia, kissing and hugging. "My goodness, child, where on earth have you been?" cried her father, rather crossly. "We've been half mad with worry." He thought she'd been playing some stupid trick, and he was so glad to see her it made him angry. "Don't be angry, Dad," said Virginia. "I met Sir Simon, the ghost of the Cantervilles. He told me that he had been wicked, but that he was very sorry for everything, and he asked me to ask for forgiveness for him. So I did. He's now at rest forever, and look, he gave me this box of jewels." They stared at her as if she'd gone mad. Mrs. Umney looked as if she might faint clean away. "Come with me," said Virginia. "I'll show you." She led them through the door in the panelling and down a narrow secret passage. Washington lit the way with a candle. They came to a big oak door, studded with rusty nails. When Washington touched it, it swung open. They were in a little, low room with one tiny barred window. In the wall was a heavy iron ring. Chained to it was a skeleton, lying on the stone floor. Everyone stared at the strange scene in wonder. The twins looked out of the little window. "So this is where he was hiding," said Georgie. "He was hiding here," said Harry. "And look in the garden. That old dead pear tree has come to life," cried Georgie. "I can see the flowers." "He has been forgiven, poor chap," said Virginia gravely. "You are an angel," said the Duke of Cheshire. 8 black horses, each with a headdress of magnificent ostrich feathers, pulled Sir Simon's funeral carriage. It was a magnificent scene. Lord Canterville himself was the chief mourner. Having come from Wales for the funeral, he sat in the front carriage with Virginia and her father. Mrs. Otis and Washington and the twins were in the next one. In the last carriage sat Mrs. Umney. Everyone felt that she had been terrified for so long, she had the right to see he was finally at rest. "By the ear of pig and tooth of hound, He'll lie forever underground, she muttered over and over. The Canterville ghost was buried under the biggest yew tree in the graveyard, its branches spread like cradling arms over the earth. Mr. Otis wanted the casket of jewels to go back to the Canterville family. Virginia agreed with him. But Lord Canterville would have none of it. Sir, he said, your brave child has saved the soul of Sir Simon de Canterville. My family is very grateful for her courage. Sir Simon gave her the jewels, and they are clearly hers. If I were heartless enough to take them, I do believe that wicked old fellow would be back to his tricks in a fortnight. A few years later, Virginia wore the jewels at her wedding to the Duke of Cheshire. On the day after their honeymoon, they drove down to Canterville Chase. It was a brilliant, sunny afternoon as they walked down the leafy, narrow lanes to the little graveyard. The gravestone was very plain. It simply had Sir Simon's initials and the verse from the library window. Virginia scattered some roses and stood silently for a while. Virginia, said her husband, you've never told me what happened when you disappeared. I never can, my dear, she said, in honour of Sir Simon. For all his bad deeds, he taught me one thing. Good will always triumph over evil. And she never did tell a living soul for all of her long life.